Inspiring South Africans, the show about people and featuring people and organizations who are doing it with purpose and focused on the healing of the people and the planet. And we are broadcasting from Heart Bay, Cape Town, South Africa. And my guest today is Professor Sanette Pienaar, a social entrepreneur, a compassionate caregiver, and the founder and executive chairperson of Heartbeat, a nurturing organization which empowers orphans and vulnerable children and those who support them to be responsible leaders of the future. The mission of Heartbeat is that it dreams of all children in Africa being happy and having opportunities to fulfill their dreams. Welcome, Sanette.
Thank you so much, Heather. Thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful. I think it's an incredible organization that you started and in 2000. So what I'm going to ask you now is take us back there and what inspired you to start this organization and to leave your then comfort zone as a church minister?
This is such a long story, Heather. So I'm thinking how to just focus on, I think, what drove me the most. You know, at that time, we were kind of in the midst of responding to what is now the challenges, you know, of the new South Africa, in the sense that we came together in a kind of a collective way to do this. And I think, you know, there are many people of my generation at that point of time that thought, well, we did receive so many opportunities in our lives to become who we wanted to. So is there a way that we could perhaps use some of our skills and our resources and whatever it was that we had to address these needs? And at that time, I was in a traditional Afrikaans church, approaching them and saying, you know, I believe that this should be church in community. That's what we should be doing. You know, I think coming from that perspective in kind of what at that time was very much a male-dominated church and saying, well, you know, we should reach out to children and in previously what was then previously disadvantaged communities and see how we can help was a foreign concept and was not that easily understood or adopted by the traditional kind of mainstream church. So given that, given the fact that one of the main issues of that problem was that HIV and AIDS was seen as a health issue and it was not seen as a socioeconomic issue. So nobody was really looking at what the problems were as a result of the epidemic. One of them being just so many children, millions and millions of children being orphaned. And so we really looked for something where we could help and children are our future. Children will lead our future generation.
Yes, are you still there?
Generations, they will create a better society. They look different. Let's focus on it. I'm still here. Yes, let's focus on it and let's see how we can address it.
Yes, okay. That's what a beautiful story. Now, you know, you've obviously got access to the latest statistics of HIV orphans in South Africa. I only have the stats up to 2010.
Yeah, these are pretty recent that you have here, Heather, and I think it's daunting enough if you just look at where we are. And if you think of the other difficulties that our youth face every day. So what people don't know about our children that are orphaned is the fact that they are mainly teenagers. Now, they're not small children. We have very few of them now being infected because of the HIV, because of the antiretroviral rollout.
Okay, now
which is really showing and proving to be impactful and showing results. So many fewer children are born.
Yes.
Sorry, Heather.
We've just got a tricky line, but we're going to try and work with it. Can you still hear me?
I can hear you very clearly.
Okay, so can you just go through those stats there and tell me, are they the ones? Do you want to read them out, the stats?
So it says, yeah, it was in 2004, 12 million children lost one or both parents due to HIV globally, and by 2010, the number would increase to 18 million children. In South Africa, it's estimated that 2.2 million children are orphans, which would be 12% of all children. And I must add to that children and youth, which is not always said. By 2010, this number will increase to 3.1 million. So, I mean, that is really a daunting number of children, and it really accounts for another lost generation.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I find astounding, and I believe I was talking to somebody else the other day who's coming on my show, and apparently the HIV infections have increased this year by phenomenally, you know, even though we have antiretrovirals and the education out there. What would you attribute that to?
My goodness, you know, I think one of the things are that the grandparents that's been taking care of many of our children, that they themselves are now passing away. So we have many more children that are living on their own and might be kind of registered and absorbed by the system. But, you know, HIV and AIDS is no longer a sexy issue. None is kind of, neither is orphans and vulnerable children as a result of the epidemic. There are many more issues now that we are looking at. And the difficulty is, as soon as that happens and the social responses are not as intense and it does not receive that kind of awareness that it always have received, if we don't continue that and we don't continue these campaigns, people will still continue with their behavior despite the fact that there's medication that is available. I'm just thinking of a recent case. The stigma is as great, you know. This is a young man who doesn't want to expose himself, who doesn't want to even talk to his friends about it. If it was not that there was someone that he really trusted that worked in healthcare in this instance, I mean, he would just have never said anything, and no one would admit what that really is. So, yes, I think the fact that our resources are split, is, you know, split amongst so many issues, and that we're no longer focusing on HIV and AIDS as a real big thing that we should address from various perspectives and still have these campaigns. I do think that is harmful.
Yeah, okay. Now, how many orphans and vulnerable children do you estimate that you've reached since your inception, and who do these children include?
Heather, since we started, we reached approximately 50,000 children, and we've reached them through various interventions. So one of the things that we have is what we call a training and mentorship program. So we have documented the model of care that we have tested and trialed and that really works, that's still sustaining itself after 14 years, and we've accredited it. So we can now provide training to organizations, accredited training, to assist them to also reach children. And we've been doing that for a while without accreditation. Now we do have that. And through that kind of training, our idea was to see how we can utilize our knowledge and to now share it with as many people as possible so that they can also build these programs for the children.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. Now, I believe Heartbeat's first intervention, I love the story, was to buy a pair of school shoes for a child. Can you take us through that story and how it still directs the course of Heartbeat today?
You know, Heather, now I think the beauty of it is that when we started, and when I talk about we, at that point in time, there were three of us. It was me and two friends, and we met up with who has become one of our best friends and still with Heartbeat in partnership with us, Ziwe Nwabi. We met in Carltonville, and we literally had no idea what we were doing, none. So we had to depend 100% on guidance from the community. So we spent many, many, many months just learning and learning and learning and trying to understand what is there that we can do. And in that time, one of the children that came across was 12 at the time, and he was staying alone in a home. His parents both passed away. He didn't have any siblings either. And he was really, really traumatized. He didn't want to talk to us. But the one thing that he told Siziwe was that he needed a pair of school shoes. And, you know, we not ourselves having much decided that a pair of school shoes is our first intervention, and that could be really helpful. And it was amazing what the impact was, a pair of school shoes, because this little boy went to school again, he could physically now walk to school, where previously he could.
Wow.
He didn't feel excluded any longer because he didn't have shoes. Children would tease him. So he was integrated socially again. He was integrated educationally again into his school. And the impact of that on his life was, you know, that he managed to complete matric. And I know that he always dreamed of being a pilot. So he went on some courses to introduce him to that. So it's amazing what a pair of school shoes actually could do. And I don't normally encourage that we give handouts and gifts. But sometimes we also underestimate the value of delivering these kind of things to just get children onto par with all the rest of the children. Because that's what Wilson said. He said, you know, before, and this is the boy's name at that time, he said, you know, before you came, I was so different. You know, I had no friends. I couldn't go to school. But after this, I'm now just like all the other children. And that's really become our compass, was how do we ensure that whomever we get involved with, whichever children, that they can say, we are now just like all the other children.
You know, it's a simple thing, but how powerful was that one little pair of shoes to give him back his dignity and self-esteem and worthiness, you know? It just, it's such a lovely story. And, you know, yeah, I know of this. I've dealt with a lot of children before, and, you know, the children are very vulnerable and, you know, sensitive, and they feel kind of really excluded when they haven't got a pair of shoes. I've seen this many, many times, and, mm-hmm. and it's just such a great picture to envisage. Now, what I'd like to do now is, what is an orphanage that, you know, how many orphanages have you got? I'm trying to understand the infrastructure of what you've pulled together here over the years. Are there, what is an orphanage and what is, you know, in that space? How you actually support these children? Just paint a picture for me, please.
Heather, there are different models that people use to support children that are orphaned. You know, there is the model where you set up some form of children's home and then you can accommodate a few children in that children's home. There's a model where you have various little houses, and every little house would have a foster care mother. And, you know, then there would be children that's supported by that foster care mother, a mother. And then there is what we call community-based care. And that is really when you look at the large numbers of children that are orphaned, and you look at how you can possibly support them, but also support them with the help and with the assistance of community members, of course. You know, I mean, that should be your main point of entry. But with community members, with NGOs, different traditional leaders, with whoever is in that community, with schools, with churches. So you really look at how can you provide that kind of support and what role could you play in that? So what Heartbeat has done is we've developed a model of community-based care whereby we set up what we call children's forums, where we mobilize all the various stakeholders in the community to talk specifically about the issues of these children. We have what we call after-school centers in various communities where children can come after school and where they can come and receive support, which would be support with their homework. We have holiday programs where we do extra mathematics and sciences teaching and school holiday programs with the children. We do children's camps. We have at the centers counseling services for the kids. And then we also have care workers or caregivers, and these are trained care workers that we then train and mobilize and employ in the communities, and they're from the communities, to work with the children in their homes. So every care worker would have a number of homes that she would look after, but the children themselves live in their own homes where their parents passed away, and the request for that happening came from the children. Community-based care is also a strategy that was adopted by social development. And so many of our programs are also supported by social development to one extent or the other. But there are so many children that in every community where we work,
we have to make this very, very difficult decision and work with stakeholders to identify a certain group of children, because we simply cannot work with all the children. There are just too many children that's in real need. So it's a variety of services. It's mobilization. We ensure that when the electricity gets cut off because kids cannot pay, that the electricity is switched on. We would ensure that the children have paraffin, that food is delivered to their homes, that they learn how to cook, that they learn about safety. We would ensure that the siblings, the smaller kids, go to creches. We work with the schools, so the schools would ensure that the children they report when the children is not at school, when there are really difficulties. They work with the care workers. So it's really a whole community-based mobilization and support environment which we create around these children, so that they feel that they do receive the same care as other children in the community.
So, Ned, this is absolutely extraordinary. I'm absolutely blown away at the huge amount of infrastructure that you have in place with all these people, and it's all basically done on a community basis. And I mean, I know all about in our informal settlement here. Yeah. And the trust that you have to engender in the caregivers and the people that are responsible for basically keeping it going. How do you do all that?
You know, Heather, what's happened over time is there was a time where USAID gave big grants for some organizations to deal with orphan and vulnerable children, and that was a five-year grant. So what happened after that five-year grant stopped is that many of our organizations really struggled because we could no longer pay all the care workers that we had. And what has happened over 14 years is that we have established in the community such a...